Hello, everybody. I'm Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, here with episode 64 of Weed All About It, or what I'm calling Alex McGregor Counts His Blessings. Continued. About my interview with former president and current chairman of the McGregor Company, Alex McGregor. In episode 63, the first part of my interview, you learned about the transition that occurred recently at the McGregor Company. In the summer of 2017, Alex McGregor's son, Ian, assumed daily leadership of the company while his dad ascended to chairman of the board, a position that removes the elder McGregor from the daily grind of running the business into a position of being an influencer and big issue thinker. At the same time, it serves notice the company understands it must transition to a younger demographic to succeed. Alex McGregor's early professional career is not exactly what you might expect for the president of a large Northwest-based agricultural retailer. He didn't attend Washington State University's Ag College, for instance, and he didn't return to the family business when he did graduate. Instead, he launched a career as an historian and taught at both Whitman College in Walla Walla and the University of Washington. Although it might be viewed as an odd skill set for a hands-on agricultural company, McGregor developed something unique during his career in academia, and that was the ability to talk and write about the experience of farmers passionately, even poetically. I've always enjoyed gatherings where Alex McGregor speaks. One summer on the top of Steptoe Butte, he battled strong winds as he regaled a group of wheat farmers from other regions of the country with the story of pioneer families coming into the Palouse. The wind had met its match. When I was a young parent, I remember telling my quarreling children to use your words when they were angry or frustrated. I'm reminded of the expression because Alex McGregor is a guy who uses his words. And he uses them liberally. He doesn't just extol his company. He celebrates farmers throughout the region and goes to the mat for them at every opportunity.
The first time I testified before Congress was 32 years ago when we were facing big piles of grain everywhere and some pretty tough times. I talked about the challenges farmers faced and the need for more focus on exports, and had it down pretty well. Then I was hit with some critical comments from a Rust Belt senator who said I should have been there for hearings on the steel industry and steel exports. And I was kind of reeling in shock from that. And then I got thinking about it, thinking about the 2,500 farmers I knew at home. And I told myself, Alex, you don't have to take that. Remember, you were in the top four of your graduating class at Hooper Grade School. Now, it's true everyone in the class could make the same claim, but that gave me some enthusiasm. And ever since, I've been pretty darn passionate about telling the story of farm families and why it matters. So that's a big deal for us. So long as we keep an eye to the future, a long-term focus, we succeed because the people we serve succeed.
And let's talk for a moment about the people that you serve. You know, there is a consolidation going on throughout agriculture, and that includes the farmers themselves. Right. Is there a critical mass of farmers that is necessary to bring the pressure to have the laws that we need?
It's important, especially as our numbers are fewer, as farms get larger, which is a trend that goes back to the 1920s and 30s. It's important that all of us pitch in and speak out on issues. Farmers have an awful lot of clout. Sometimes they don't realize how well their voices can be heard. A couple of examples from times when I've been, as always, in grower agronomy meetings, not talking about the virtues of Orange McGregor machinery, but about issues that matter and what people can do. A couple examples that come to mind. One was when there was yet another attempt to put taxes on fertilizers, chemicals, equipment. Rather eccentric legislator from Puget Sound got in touch with me after I'd urged people to contact their legislators and said, "We thought agriculture would be the goose that would squeak the least when it got its feathers plucked, but I've got more than 100 calls from McGregor customers, including landlords from my district. Got the message." Another time, a grower sent me a note and a copy of a letter he'd sent to a senator on a crucial issue, and said, "Alex, I didn't expect anything to happen here, but I did this to get you off my back." He told me later that the senator called him when he was out running the tractor on his cell phone, and he about fell out of the tractor for shock. Farmers have a lot of clout and are well respected.
You're a Pacific Northwest company, Oregon, Idaho, Washington, right? Right. That's it.
We have branches from Ellensburg to Grangeville, and then from Creston to Adams near Pendleton. We have seed treatment customers in the Willamette Valley, southern Idaho, and western Montana. But the Pacific Northwest is our world, yeah.
And by and large, Washington is your largest footprint?
It is.
And just this, you know, I don't know if this will even go in, but I'm just curious that the paradigm change that went from, you know, the McGregor company being this company or being this farm that had millions of sheep to the fact that we have no sheep anymore. Do you guys have any sheep anymore?
I had to make a decision with Sharon Hannis, who's my good friend and is our unofficial mayor of Hooper, Washington, that our small group of sheep that we had kept over the years down to a couple dozen, we'd finally phase out of. I grew up around sheep. My first big job when I was 11 years old was moving a band of sheep about 6 miles through the rocks. I'd practiced the Spanish commands that the Basque herders gave the dogs and delivered them in a halting, squeaky voice. And the dog sat there and panted while I ran from one side of the band to the other side of the band, going nowhere. After 3 or 4 hours, at least it seemed that long, I saw the sheep foreman's green station wagon bouncing through the rocks, and I knew my career with McGregor's was about to end. Fortunately, he understood that I'd run myself ragged and said, "You got to be firm with those dogs." But Emil Moreau, who was our sheep foreman for 55 years, said of our business, "It all come out of them damn sheep." And in many ways, it did. That's where our roots were. Though it grew over time, we were latecomers starting to grow wheat. We didn't get started until 1901. My cousin John McGregor, who was the brains of the pioneers, said that our biggest adversary in the early days was the farmer and his shotgun back when we were tramp herders. But we started growing wheat in 1901, first for sheep feed and then saw opportunity in it. So we've evolved over time. We had a general store at Hooper that was a robust business. Back in 1910, 1920, $200,000 in annual sales, if you look at their old statements. That was a lot of money. And my dad said that the kiss of death for the Hooper General Store was expiration dates on food packages. You just couldn't turn it fast enough, and the choice was having a big empty barn. So now our general store is our history museum and a gathering place for legislators, friends, a gathering place where I can tell the history of farm families, and people have no escape. There's nowhere else you can go in Hooper to get away from it. So we've changed over the years. Now we have cow-calf, a cow-calf business that is less complicated than the sheep business was. With sheep, we made money 97 years out of 100. Only in the Great Depression did we fall into the red. With cattle, it's up and down all over the place. I'd love to have a band of sheep again. When I say that to my colleagues at the ranch, they look at me like, "How could you be so misguided?" But sheep were a mainstay over the years. And actually, pioneers would tell you, too, that for all the talk about the sheep-cattle wars, it made sense to have both because the sheep would keep the weeds down and the cattle would eat the perennial bunch grass. But things have evolved. What hasn't changed are our values. I remember speaking at an Ag Retailers Association meeting many years ago on teamwork, and I described myself as chief executive cheerleader and talked about how I try to know people once they've been on board with us for a month, no matter where they're located, and about how I don't believe in there being a certain distance, as some advisors would suggest, between senior management and people in the field. I believe that every job is equally important in its own way. So I have a passion for what we do. I'm dyed-in-the-wool optimist and enthusiastic about the future. But if you have a computer challenge, you probably should not choose me as your number one expert.
Now, you're a large Pacific Northwest company, millions of dollars in revenue, but you're competing against companies that have billions of dollars in revenue. How can you keep that up in this era of consolidation?
We will do just fine in those times because we have passionate, dedicated people. We know that providing value for growers is something that is an ever-evolving process, that you've got to be able to lead the charge. But our goal is to have enough scale to be able to be competitive in providing good value for the growers we serve, and to never lose track of our roots and those values that keep us strong and keep us focused on the long haul. I think also, as a family business that's been around here since Washington was a territory, we have a longer-term view of things. We look down the road and are not as driven by the next quarterly return. For us, it's all about going all out, making a difference for farmers. And as Dad used to say, when our farm families succeed, so do we. We know that providing value for growers is something that is an ever-evolving process, that you've got to be able to lead the charge. I look at our commitment to agricultural research, now nearing 70 years, and our commitment to having very well-trained certified crop advisors, some 70 of them on board. If we keep focusing on the things that really matter to us, the things that differentiate ourselves, we do just fine because we have a long-term commitment to be here. Over the years, other firms have come and gone. In the early years, there were many companies that were international oil companies in the field, for example. They're long gone. We will continue to prosper. And when we have opportunities to grow, we're not looking at a facility because of we like the look of the sheet metal on the exterior or because they've got lots of iron. We're looking for businesses that have dedicated people and a strong customer base. My dad used to say in challenging times, "This too shall pass." And I think if my experience and our experience over 135 years tells us anything, it's that agriculture is a good place to put down roots for the long haul. It's certainly not an easy trade, but it's got a lot of rewards that have to do with passion, with making a difference for a farm family, with making sure the place is in better shape at the end of your tour of duty than when you got started. You can read all sorts of grim projections on challenging times. My dad used to say that any time all the experts agreed that agriculture was heading in one direction, be careful because it would go the other way. I think back to 2011 and 2012, and I've got a big file of these where many people wrote that we were going to be challenged to produce massive amounts of grain just to keep the bare minimums of feeding people, that we would have at least 50 years of high prices for wheat and other crops. And I read that and thought, yeah, right, it's not like that. But in downtimes, too, we need to remember this too shall pass. If we stick with it, keep our strong focus on making a difference, keep our belief in those special lands where each of us farms, keep our values straight, I think the future's got great promise for us. So I would share this perspective that these challenging times too shall pass. And when we're in these times, we need to all pull together and make sure we get things done. I look at the 2018 Farm Bill, for example. If there's one benefit, and it's the only one I see, of commodity prices having been low the last 4 years, it's that it gives us some clout when we go to Washington, D.C. to say, don't mess around with the Farm Bill. Do no harm. The 2014 Farm Bill was projected to cut $38 billion out of what the previous Farm Bill would have provided. It's now tagged at about $100 billion. This is no time to be cutting back your commitment to agriculture, America. As Senator Pat Roberts puts it, agriculture is already given at the store. We need to be out making the case that this is a time where farmers need assistance, where pulling together we're going to do something that is good for America's security, food security, that is good for hungry people here and around the globe, and that makes a difference for those remarkable salt-of-the-earth farm families. We've evolved from those days, and you remember them too, where we would go to Washington, D.C. and get emergency market loss assistance. It was a cumbersome, unwieldy tool, but it was all we had. I look at crop insurance now. Growers have money in that. It's not a freebie. You have to invest a lot in it. You have to have a significant loss before you get funding. But it's crucial to the future. We need a good safety net. We're going to fight for it, and we're going to get it. So challenging times make me more determined about the future than ever, because I think of those thousands of farm families, many with roots going back over a century, all with extraordinary people on board, and I think what a positive, powerful story we have. But we have to all pull together and tell that story, and it's a bipartisan effort. Bipartisan meaning, too, among all of us in agriculture. Cotton growers and dairy farmers see shortcomings in the last farm bill from their perspective. There are different things that need to be tweaked. We need to work together, though, and make sure that we have a strong farm bill. And, oh, by the way, we've been exporting grain since 1869, when the first Walla Walla flour was put in barrels, sent by sailing ship 17 months to the docks at Liverpool, England, to feed dock workers there. Our future depends on exports. We have to make sure to be pushing on that, not only to keep NAFTA, but beyond that, if we weren't to have the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the equalizer was said to be bilateral trade agreements. Well, let's get in gear and get them going. So I think we've got a lot to do pulling together in these times. My view from, I don't know whether it's 30,000 feet or from many years of experience, my view is we have a lot of clout. This is a time to be pulling together to get things done. And as we do that, better days are ahead.
you have such good things to say about your customers, the farmers, but customer loyalty has changed over the last 40 years. It used to be that farmers would stay with the same company simply because that was the company they were with. Now, pricing is much more important. How has loyalty changed for the company?
Loyalty is something that's deeply appreciated and must be forever nurtured and reinforced, never taken for granted. For me and my colleagues, we go all out to show appreciation with superior effort. For me personally, I do something that few in the retail supply world do, go all out to tell the story of farm families, to fight on their behalf, to call on them when I know they can help win the day. And there's a well-kept secret that I mentioned earlier, that farmers have a lot of clout. As a company, we work hard to earn that loyalty and to keep earning it year after year. I'm not quite so convinced, though, when you look backwards, it's easy to have the glasses become a little blurry. I'm not so convinced, really, that the 70s and 80s were a time where people just worked with the same outfit without ever questioning. It was more complicated than that. Now it's more complicated still. And I think over time, by showing you provide value and by making sure that you're doing things to help growers succeed, I think you build on that loyalty. And yes, it's a price-conscious world, especially when commodity prices are low. That just means you have to show that you're providing extraordinary value. That we're committed to do. I like these times because if there was a time earlier where people just worked with you out of habit, in these days, it's more complex, it's more challenging, it's more interesting. You have to find a way where you can make a difference for that farm family. You have to build a relationship that's not just based on how we were friends in high school, but is based on things that matter, that help farm families succeed. We have a passion for agriculture and farm families, and I think that passion, long-term view, and dedication puts us in a very strong position. And yes, it is stronger than other firms because it is deeply rooted and because our ties are right here. Some view this area as a remote outpost. For us, the Inland Northwest is our world, and we're going to be the very best we can be in our world.
The very best we can be in our world. That sounds like a wonderful motto for a company or even a recipe for life. Quickly, for those just tuning in, remember this is episode 64 of the Wheat All About It podcast, and there's hours of listening pleasure where this episode came from. While iTunes limits how far back you can listen, the Washington Grain Commission website at wagrains.org has a summary button you can click on at the bottom of the page to download anything already aired. I hope you enjoyed episode 64 of Wheat All About It, or what I've entitled, Alex McGregor Counts His Blessings, Continued. Please tell your friends, neighbors, landlords, siblings, parents, children, distant relatives about this podcast. And join me again next time for another episode of Wheat All About It. You think we're simple, you think we're not right. Look at your cities and ask yourself who's right. We've got country and you've got crime. We've got green and you've got grime. Let there be no doubt, we have what it takes to till the soil until our back aches. Just give us a break and don't be so rude. We love the work and you love the food.
We feed you.